Anyway, Paul said helpfully from the rear. Anyway, he started selling stuff, and of course Jesse could not be content as a small-timer. He had some contacts in Dade County. One thing led to another, and before long he had a nice business, had his own organization with lots of ambition. "Didn't someone get killed?" Paul asked. "I was getting to that," Mal growled at his rearview mirror. "Just trying to help. I always wanted a banker in my back seat, a real white-collar type. Yeah, and I always wanted to foreclose on the sheriff." "Truce," Neely said. "You were getting to the good part." Mal reshifted, his large stomach rubbing the wheel. One more harsh glance into his mirror, then the state and ARC slowly crept in, as they always do. They nabbed a flunky, threatened him with 30 years of prison and sodomy, convinced him to flip. He set up a drop with narcs hiding in the trees and under rocks. The deal went bad. Guns were grabbed. Shots went off. A narc took a bullet in the ear and died on the spot. The flunky got hit but survived. Jesse was nowhere around, but it was his people. He became a priority, and within a year he was standing before his honor, receiving his 28 years, no parole. 28 years, Neely repeated. "Yep, I was in the courtroom, and I actually felt sorry for the scumbag. I mean, here's a guy who had the tools to play in the NFL. Size, speed, mean as hell. Plus, Rake had drilled him from the time he was 14. Rake always said that if Jesse had gone to A&M, he wouldn't have turned bad. Rake was in the courtroom, too." "How long has he served?" Neely asked. 9, 10 years maybe, I ain't counting. Y'all hungry?" "We just ate," Neely said. "Surely you can't be hungry again," Paul said. "No, but there's this little joint right up here where Miss Armstrong makes pecan fudge. I hate to pass it." "Let's keep going," Neely said. "Just say no." "Take it one day at a time, Mal," Paul offered from the rear. The Buford detention facility was in flat, treeless farmland at the end of a lonely paved road lined with miles of chain-link fencing. Neely was depressed before any building came into sight. Mal's phone calls had arranged things properly, and they were cleared through the front gates and drove deeper into the prison. They changed vehicles at a checkpoint, swapping the roomy patrol car for the narrow benches of an extended golf cart. Mal rode up front where he chatted nonstop with the driver, a guard wearing as much ammunition and gadgets as the sheriff himself. Neely and Paul shared the back bench, facing the rear, as they passed more chain link and razor wire. They got an eyeful as they puttered past Camp A, a long, dismal cinder block building with prisoners lounging on the front steps. On one side, a basketball game was raging. All the players were black. On the other side, an all-white volleyball game was in progress. Camps B, C, and D were just as bleak. How could anyone survive in there? Neely asked himself. At an intersection, they turned and were soon up at Camp E, which looked somewhat newer. At Camp F, they stopped and walked 50 yards to a point where the fencing turned 90 degrees. The guard mumbled something into his radio, then pointed and said, "Walk down that fence to the white pole. He'll be out shortly." Neely and Paul began walking along the fence, where the grass had recently been cut. Mal and the guard held back and lost interest. Behind the building and beside the basketball court was a slab of concrete, and scattered across it were all sorts of mismatched barbells and bench presses and stacks of dead weights. Some very large black and white men were pumping iron in the morning sun, their bare chests and backs shining with sweat. Evidently, they lifted weights for hours each day. "There he is," Paul said. "Just getting up from the bench press, on the left." "That's Jesse," Neely said, mesmerized by a scene that few people ever witnessed. A trustee approached and said something to Jesse Trapp, who jerked his head and searched the fence line until he saw the two men. He tossed a towel onto a bench and began a slow, purposeful, Spartan-like walk across the slab, across the empty basketball court, and onto the grass that ran to the fence around Camp F. From 40 yards away, he looked huge, but as Jesse approached, the enormity of his chest and neck and arms became awesome. They had played with him for one season. He was a senior when they were sophomores, and they had seen him naked in the locker room. They had seen him fling heavily loaded barbells around the weight room. they had seen him set every Spartan lifting record. He looked twice as big now, his neck as thick as an oak stump, his shoulders as wide as a door. His biceps and triceps were many times a normal size. His stomach looked like a cobblestone street. He wore a crew cut that made his square head even more symmetrical. And when he stopped and looked down at them, he smiled. "Hey, boys," he said, still breathing heavily from the last set of reps. "Hello, Jesse," Paul said. "How are you?" Neely said. "Doing well. Can't complain. Good to see y'all. I don't get many visitors." "We have bad news, Jesse," Paul said. "Yeah, I figured. Rake's dead. Passed away last night." He lowered his chin until it touched his massive chest. From the waist up, he seemed to shrink a little as the news hit him.